Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This is a Manhattan-bound B Express train. The next stop is Grand Street.
Mind the gap.
Hello, I'm John Elledge, and this is Skylines, the City Metric podcast. It's an absolutely glorious day in London, by which I mean it's just completely pissing it down. So this seemed like a really good opportunity to talk about fun things you can do in the outside world. What could be more appropriate than that? To do that, I am joined by the New Statesman's newly minted Britain editor.
That hasn't been announced yet, so that's an exclusive for your podcast, John.
Is that, should we cut this bit?
No, let's leave it.
Okay, well, there you go. News for you guys. Yeah, soft launch for Anoush's new job. And also reasonably newly minted co-host of the New Statesman podcast.
Yeah.
Anoush Shakelian, hello, how are you doing?
Hi, good, thanks. That's really, that lovely plug.
Yeah, I really should have got you on here before now, because we basically joined the NS the same week, didn't
we? Yeah, we're NS twins.
Yeah, we are, really, which is nice, because as with most people around here, I'm quite a lot older than you. so twins is nice. We're also recording this not for the first time on a phone because of some kind of internal technical incident, which we won't go into. But as I say, we're going to talk about the outside. Anoush, you're a big fan of outdoor gyms.
Yeah, so I've been doing this thing for a while now, nearly a year, called Our Parks, which is a sort of sports scheme that uses public parks, not just in London, but across the country, for gym classes. So they basically pay gym instructors the proper amount of money, and these people are proper professional people, but then you can go for free to these classes whenever you want, whenever you have the time, wherever in your borough or outside of your borough, if you want to do it near or elsewhere that you can get to. So the reason I started was because I really don't like gyms. I hate them. I've never been a proper member of a gym. I just think they're sort of like horrible, sweaty, but brightly lit nightclubs with lots of intimidating people in them. They're very expensive. You're never going to make it to the gym that often unless you're a real fanatic. So I've never really wanted that to be my arena of exercise. So I quite like the idea that there's a few parks around where I live and I can just like go down whenever I feel like it and go and do a proper gym class where you basically outsource the psychological torment of making yourself do exercise to someone else who tells you to do exercise.
So it's an actual class. Someone's like shouting at you to do the right
thing. Yeah, exactly. Well, gently sort of trying to persuade you to do the right thing.
Because while we're doing sort of like unexpected confessions on Skylines, I have recently been going to a gym.
Oh,
very
wow.
Very off-brand.
Oh, okay. Well, I take back all of my...
No, I'm completely with you. Like, there is one in the building next to my flat,
okay.
Which I meant to join as soon as I moved in November, and it took me 7 months to kind of work up the nerve to actually, just because I knew it'd be horrible.
Yeah.
And the first time I said, I just thought, I will kind of fool myself. I will like join it on the internet, and then I will just go once, and then that'll be like annoying and irritating, but you know, I'll have done it, and then it'll be fine.
Yeah.
And then the fob that they sent me didn't work. So
a gift from God.
So I had to speak to someone to let me in, and then he insisted on showing me. And I was so rude to this poor guy because I was just like, no, it's fine. I don't need to know anything. Just go away. Leave me alone. Because I didn't want another human being to acknowledge me in a gym setting.
Yeah.
And then I bumped into him in Sainsbury's later. It was really awful. Anyway, but after that, it was kind of fine.
Oh, good.
And actually, yeah, it's just like, you know, if you just go there, you do half an hour and then... Although it has got weird recently that people have started trying to talk to me and I don't really like that. I'm still very much, I don't want anyone to acknowledge my existence.
Yeah, well, there you go. Well, that's my, so that's a good thing. So this is a big part of my enthusiasm for sort of outdoor gym classes and free sort of community gym things, is that people do end up talking to you because you generally meet the same people each week or each class that you do. And I think that meeting people in your area, not through work or through your social life, is quite an unusual thing these days. Mm. I mean, we've been talking a lot about it in the New Statesman office for a new series that we're going to be reporting on, which is about the lack of public space that there is, particularly in city environments now, what with, you know, libraries closing, community centres closing, youth clubs, all due to cutbacks from the austerity agenda from over nearly 10 years ago now. And also, you know, pubs closing, 2 pubs close a day, I think. So it's, yeah, it's weirdly like the kind of places where you would rub shoulders with people who live in your area but who aren't necessarily from your close circle is kind of disappearing, and with that support network.
Yeah, it is sort of weird that like the Tories, the party that like claims it's all about kind of like the importance of communities and mm, like, you know, that takes a village and all that nonsense.
Exactly,
it's just like,
yeah,
totally undermined all those kind of structures by privatizing everything. And you know the thing about private public space.
Yes, yeah.
Which is a growing issue in London. These bits that just look like part of the streetscape but are in fact private estates where like there are security guards who can throw you out of Canary Wharf if they want to.
Yeah.
Even though it's like, you know, a big chunk of the city, it's still technically owned by a bunch of private investors and they and people can just get rid of you if they don't like you. And that's kind of weird, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's kind of happening in areas, I think it's happening in places where sort of there are big new housing developments as well. So you'll get these sort of public looking squares. They might even be labelled like that, but actually they're just for the people who have managed to buy flats in that development. That's the kind of theme of these public, in inverted commas, spaces that are moving in where other kind of more traditional spaces are disappearing.
There was a horrible story a while back about some kind of new housing development. It's one of those that was kind of mixed. So it's social housing, but also some private ones, kind of it's a cross-subsidy thing.
Yeah.
But that had like a playground for the private owners, which was visible from the social housing windows, but they weren't allowed to use it. So the poor kids with their faces pressed up against the window. I feel like it's just kind of gross that like anyone kind of could have thought that that was an okay way of doing things.
Yeah.
It feels like something's gone terribly wrong in society that nobody would look to that and went, guys, we shouldn't.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that was a really horrible example of this trend. That was a sort of extreme example as well. I'm so glad it got exposed, but it is happening in other developments as well. The block of flats where I live, they want to build a whole new layer of flats on the top to try and, you know, make money. And to do that for the next 3 or 5 years, they need to put the building site in the communal playground where all of the children from the estate play. So with decisions, you know, it doesn't have to be as extreme as shutting certain children out of a playground. It can also be the fact that you want to make so much use of the space you have that you're stopping all the children playing in the one communal bit of space that they actually have. And that just seems to be a trend, and it is a worrying trend because, you know, you need to be able to have that human contact for a community to be able to work. I went recently to East London Mosque, where they're sort of soft launching the next census, among other places, to try and reach the people who may be harder to reach to fill it in. And the census people there from the ONS were telling me that this time round, compared to the last one in 2011, they're having to look more at virtual spaces, partly because of the trend of how we communicate with each other.
Virtual spaces.
Yeah, so like reaching people, you know, through virtual networks rather than, you know, saying everyone come to this library and use these computers to do your form. And that's because of the changing way that sort of society is set up and that we interact with each other. Also, for other reasons too, you know, the change in our media, you know, you might not pick up a local paper anymore, for example, so you won't necessarily see the information that you need in that way.
So on the outdoor gym thing, like, so what are the kind of people who are using them? Like, is it a reasonably wide cross-section of, where are you? East London,
yeah. So everyone who I tell about, I'm a bit of an evangelist for this scheme. Everyone I tell about it is always like, oh, so that more, you know, middle-class Londoners like you can just get a cheaper version or a free version of a gym class. And actually, it really, really isn't like that. It's a complete mix. Anyone can go of any age. And East London is a very mixed area as well. So it's a big mix of people too. And truly in the class that I most regularly do, there are students leading up to, you know, retired women who have made friends through that very class and now hang out with each other in the area. And I've seen them, you know, out and about outside of the class context as well. So it really is a big mix. And I think that's one of the things that most people really like about it.
This sounds really good. I mean, yeah. It's not my thing for the reasons I discussed. I don't want anyone to acknowledge my existence when I'm trying to exercise. I just want to pretend to be invisible. And in fact, the thing I found most useful about going to the gym is, frankly, the being surrounded by fit people and mirrors.
Yeah,
is very motivating in terms of like sort of being honest with yourself about. Anyway, so I don't want to do this, but it sounds like a lot of people do want to do this. Why isn't there more of it?
Yeah. So the big problem here is that even with this scheme that I think is really fantastic, they are having trouble keeping the funding because they get some sort of money from LucasAid and stuff like that. Mm. But they also are mainly funded through the councils where they operate the classes, and councils don't have that much money for this kind of thing anymore. And actually, some of the classes in my area have been closing because of that funding being pulled away. So I imagine that from seeing the sort of state that the scheme is in at the moment, it is stretching out to other parts of the country, but I imagine that it might not be around for that long because of that reason.
I mean, is this largely it's just another austerity thing, right? You know, the graph of doom, that like sooner or later, every bit of local authority money is going to be swallowed by adult social care and there's nothing left in. Is it that again, basically?
To be fair, I haven't looked into it in a sort of thorough way yet, so I'm not 100% sure that that's the only factor, but it is nevertheless true that the councils where these classes take place have to spend money on certain things, so adult social care, children's services. Those are their statutory duties. The cost of those are going up for all sorts of reasons that we probably don't need to discuss here, but that means that it's gobbling up more and more of their budget, and they have to stop paying for schemes that are seen as basically less important. They're not obliged by law to run them. Something like a communal gym class doesn't sound particularly sort of vital, but actually these are the things that are, you know, we have a loneliness epidemic in this country, we have a mental health crisis, and lots of people are struggling for cash at the moment because of lots of the things we've talked about, but also, you know, wage stagnation, the benefits freeze, inflation going up. Lots of people who might have once been able to go and afford to pay for an expensive gym membership might not anymore. So it is something that has, I think, more of a social value than it looks like on the face of it. Mm. But for councils, it's so hard to justify spending money on this stuff.
So the point you made about people saying to you, oh, it's just another middle class subsidy, that is one of those points that kind of comes up a lot in these debates.
Yeah.
Like, why are we spending money on public services for people who can afford to get it privately? But the thing is, that kind of becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, because if you don't spend any money on public services that are used by the middle classes, it becomes much easier to get rid of those public services, right? It's like services for the poor become poor services.
Yeah, exactly. And also it means that you're then sort of excluding a whole, you know, majority of people from certain activities. But I know someone who worked actually in London trying to get more people into sport. And they were saying some of the harder to reach groups are pregnant women from working class backgrounds. Now, these classes have mother and baby classes for free in areas which are generally more deprived. So, you know, that is directly reaching those people rather than taking it away, taking the money away, taking the space away, because actually this isn't for you. It's middle class people who do gym classes, not you.
Yeah, I mean, if you kind of look back at, you know, one of the Blair government's big sort of public policy success stories was Sure Start centres for new mothers. And a lot of the criticism of them has been like, oh, they were just used by the middle classes.
Mm.
But that is also kind of why they worked, isn't it? They were like very popular across the... And you sort of need to be sort of selling people across the income scale on the fact that public services benefit them as well. It's not just like a subsidy for other people. If you kind of want people to buy into the idea of a bigger state, you kind of need everyone to have access to these things.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's why universal policies, so policies where you're giving something to everyone regardless of their needs, work quite well. Yes, they are expensive, but they work in the way that they reach everyone, so everyone uses them and everyone gets the same standard of service, which is sort of what we want from an equal society, right? But also it takes away the stigma of maybe using a service that is seen as bog standard or second best, or, you know, the bottom of the barrel that only someone like you can can go to because everyone else can afford better. So yeah, really, if you make it universal, also it's nicer for the way in London that you, especially in the part where I live, you have very deprived areas next to very affluent areas. It's pretty much like that across London, right? So that kind of inequality is very uncomfortable, particularly with gentrification at such a sort of galloping pace in some of these areas. So it is important to have those spaces where people from those different parts of London life interact.
Yeah. For any form of social solidarity to exist, you kind of need people to feel like they are living in the same society.
Exactly.
Rather than living parallel lives in the same place. Just one last point on this before we moved on. We were both at Labour conference.
Yeah.
Largely because the New Statesman likes to kind of, you know, rent us out to sort of chair events and panels and so on. And one of the ones I found myself chairing was an event about the future of parks.
Okay.
Sponsored by the National Trust. And I found it very striking that the National Trust, which you associate with, like, you know, big manor houses and castles and so on, is now doing a serious bit of research on the future of Britain's municipal parks because they're so underfunded. And this kind of bit of our sort of public history is now under a real threat. And like an actual, you know, the National Trust charity is stepping in to kind of look at what we can do about that. That seems crazy to me.
That is so interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah. No, I was so like, I was really thrown when I got the briefing for that event. It's just that it was not an organisation I expected to be in like the local council funding debate.
Yeah, I didn't know that either. Yeah. And obviously that kind of work is really important, particularly, I mean, climate change is like, shot up the public agenda recently for reasons of the Extinction Rebellion putting it sort of on the map, as well as the impending doom that our Earth is about to collide with. Yeah, I mean, if you let parks go to seed, or you build on them, or you get rid of them, or you don't keep funding them, then particularly in cities like London, that just makes the air so much worse than it already is.
Please mind the gap between the train.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Okay, we've been talking about parks, we've been talking wonkish stuff about parks and financing and so on. Let's sort of bring it down to my level, really. Anoush, what's your favourite park?
Oh, there's so much choice. And having grown up in London, I've seen the full gamut of London parks.
Okay, top three, right.
Yeah, you know, I really have to say, because of my West London roots and because it's dwarfed by its flashy neighbour, I think Holland Park is a really nice park. And it's because of Hyde Park being so nearby and it being the sort of tourist hotspot and everyone knows about it and it's very London. I think Holland Park sometimes gets a little bit forgotten.
I had genuinely forgotten it was a park. I thought it was just like a posh area.
Yeah, it's obviously when you think of Holland Park, you think of those enormous houses. But actually, the park is really lovely. And I have fond memories of going and feeding squirrels there with my family. And I actually once got bitten by a squirrel there.
Oh, so, blimey.
You know, that was okay. A formative childhood experience.
What did you do to offend the squirrel?
I don't know. I was feeding it a monkey nut. So it literally bit the hand that feeds. Or at least the
five-year-old finger. They're squirrels, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. They're very cocky these days. So Holland Park's probably, it's got to be my top just because I'm so fond of it from childhood. Second, and this is like a slightly edgy suggestion, is Mylem Park, which I really like, but it's completely, basically unknown unless you live nearby in that area.
It's what do they call it? It's just a...
It's like the hipster
strip park. I can't remember what they call it, but it's like, it's a very narrow strip, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a big, long corridor basically of a park, and it's got a sort of kind of like a garden bridge type thing that goes over
there's literally a green bridge over my
there's a green bridge, and it's got a lovely sort of bit of water and swans and ducks, and it's got the art pavilion and the ecology pavilion where they have little exhibitions and people have their weddings there, and it's on the canal as well, so there's a lot of water and wildlife, so it's really pretty. But I think that's like a bit of a wanky suggestion because obviously it's like not very well known, but I do think it's one of my favourite places to go and spend time in London.
I'm surprised you didn't go Victoria Park. That tends to be the kind of the standard East London park of choice.
I think Victoria Park is a really nice park and it's one of the best parts of East London, but it's not as exciting. Like, there's not as many different bits to it. It's just a very, very big park where you have room for festivals and rowing boats and like a very expensive Sri Lankan brunch.
My hipster choice of London park is the little known Burgess Park
which is
the big one in South London between like Bermondsey, Walworth and Peckham.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I've been there,
which is one of those parks that only exists because of the Luftwaffe, and they just like cleared an area of housing during the Blitz, and the London County Council was decided not to rebuild it. I mean, a couple of reasons I like it. Firstly, they're still finishing it. So when I lived nearby years ago, it still had this kind of scrappy half-finished quality that is gradually sort of becoming a proper nice park like Victoria Park.
Yeah.
But also, what used to be the Surrey Canal ran through there. The Surrey Canal isn't there anymore, so that's now a cycle path. But the bridges over the Surrey Canal remain. So there's there is a bridge over a path in the middle of a path. I don't know. That just really appeals to me. Just the kind of layers of history.
Yeah.
One last thing. You said you grew up in West London. Mm-hmm. You now live in East London.
Yeah.
Obviously, West London is worse, but but come on, give me your... How do you rate them relatively?
Yeah, so I grew up in Acton, which is very west, almost suburban, and then I've gone all the way along the central line to Mile End.
Do your old friends see this as a betrayal?
Right. Actually, some of my old friends do still live around Acton, which I actually find baffling, because while it's got everything you need to live in an area, and actually Acton is the best place to live if you want to get out of Acton fast because there's so many stations there. So, and I've got a fondness for it, but I don't think it's the best place for people our age basically to live. Like, it's very family. Mm. With Crossrail coming, the property prices are going up, and I don't find it a particularly inspiring place as a young person living in London and sort of having fun and making the most of the stuff that it has to offer. There's not as much for my taste going on there, but obviously I go back there a lot to visit my family, and
I mean, having grown up in the sort of furthest reaches of East London where it turns into Essex, I completely refuse to acknowledge the existence of West London.
Fair enough.
This is a very Ponzi story, but it gets Ponzier, but years ago I was at a party in New York, and I was speaking to a guy about when he asked where I was staying, and I told him, and he went, I try never to go above 14th Street. I know that was the most wonderfully pretentious thing I've ever heard. So I try quite hard not to go west of Hyde Park if I can avoid it. Just don't really acknowledge it.
It is a bit... I mean, the politics there are really interesting. So you've got like Boris Johnson's constituency neighbouring John McDonnell's constituency around there. So I think it's interesting. It's also Ealing and Acton, where I grew up, is the most diverse borough in the country, or one of them. It's up there. Diverse in the sense that truly there are so many different people from different backgrounds, and I think that's really nice. That's one of the parts of it that I loved. Obviously, being from an Armenian family, that was good for us too. So
cool. Well, thank you for coming on and talking about parks.
Thanks for having me for the first time.
Yeah, I should really have done that at some point in the last 3.5 years.
Just because I got a promotion, now you want me on.
Yeah, now suddenly I need to impress you, really, is what's going on here. But yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you.
If you're listening, go join an outdoor gym while you can. See you next time.
You've been listening to Skylines, the podcast from City Metric, the New Statesman City site. It was presented and recorded by me, John Alledge, and produced by Nick Hilton. You can find Skylines every 2 weeks on iTunes, Acast, or whatever other app you use to get your podcast. And while you're there, why not leave us a nice review to tell other people we're here? It really helps people discover the show, and I'm a megalomaniac, so the more people I can get listening to this, the better, really. We'll see you in 2 weeks. Thanks for listening.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.